Hey everyone, welcome to the Compass Podcast. I am Whit Gibbs and I'm joined today by Mustafa Yoham from Bishin. Mustafa put out a thread about power consumption in China by Bitcoin miners. And obviously Bishin currently has about 2% of Bitcoin's network hash rate. So he is a great person to speak with about what's actually going on with Bitcoin mining in China. I'm really excited for this conversation and I hope you all are as well. I hope that you enjoyed this episode. If you do, please consider subscribing and leaving a review on your preferred listening platform. It really helps out the show. The Compass Podcast is presented commercial-free by Compass, the number one Bitcoin mining marketplace. If you want to get started mining Bitcoin, source hard-to-find ASICs, or find competitively priced hosting space, then check Compass out at compassmining.io. And now, on to the show. Hey, Mustafa, how are you?
I'm great. How are you? Thanks for having me here.
Hey, my pleasure. I've been looking forward to this conversation. You have a ton of insight. I know we've had conversations offline, but it's nice to be able to have you on the show.
Yeah, I'm pleasure to be here.
So before we get into our chat here, why don't we give your background? For anyone who doesn't know, why don't you let them know who you are and how you got into Bitcoin mining?
Sure. So I got into crypto industry in 2014, end of 2013-2014 area. And on 2017, I was the first employee of Huobi Global in the US. So I was the director of business development there. Later on, I joined a company called Ember Group in Hong Kong as a venture partner. So worked there also for like over a year. After Ember, at the time, Ember was also having some partnership with Bishin Group. And the current CEO of Bishin Group was also we worked together at Huobi Global, and they knew that I grew up in Central Asia. So I guess a bit about my background, originally from Central Asia, speak, you know, Chinese, English, Uyghur, Uzbek, and a lot of my family members also speak Russian. And so very familiar with like the local culture and then like the business culture. So at the time, Bishin was also looking at expansion to Central Asia, Russia area. So I actually started working with them back in 2019 and spent like, you know, 6 months in Siberia, Central Asia. It was like a very cool experience. Yeah, that's how I got into mining and Bishin.
Is that six languages? Five languages?
I would say like
Chinese, Uzbek, Uyghur.
Yeah, and like English. But you know, and a little bit Turkish. But the thing is, the entire Central Asia, CIS region, all of them have a very similar language. So, I mean, if you count like each dialogue, then that would be like maybe like five to six.
It's impressive.
Yeah.
Well, so, I mean, getting into the space in 2014 with Huobi, who I'm sure most people are familiar with. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've got the mining pool now, but also it's a, you know, very prominent exchange. And there's, you know, a basket of other products that they're now offering. You know, transitioning from this like crypto world, right, where you have all of the tokens in the entire ecosystem to Bishin, which is, you know, Bitcoin and specifically Bitcoin mining focused now. What's that transition been like for you?
Yeah. So obviously for the mining side, there was like a lot to learn, especially in the beginning 3 to 6 months. But all the experience I have had so far all came very handy because Bishin, we not only like mining is part of our very large operation, but other than mining, we also run a investment desk, which have both primary and secondary market. The secondary market, we currently manage about 7,000 Bitcoin in our fund of fund to invest in global BTC denominated quant funds. Also have a venture team that invest in different, venture investments. So I think my experience both at Huobi Global and Ember, where it gave me exposure to both primary and secondary market, helped a lot with my work also at Bishin.
So a lot has happened since you've joined Bishin, right? And I apologize for butchering your pronunciation there. Am I saying it right?
Yes.
Bishin?
Yes, Bishin.
Okay. All right. Thomas is the Compass team member with the best Chinese. It's unfortunately not me. But, since joining Bishin, there's been huge growth in the Bitcoin mining space. I mean, this year especially, it seems like there's more attention than we've ever seen on Bitcoin mining.
Yeah.
Now, as a company, you guys have the investment arm, but you're also controlling a significant portion of Bitcoin's network hash rate. So with that large mining part of the business, how has it been for you guys to continue to grow and scale now that there's so much more attention being paid?
Yeah. So currently, you know, we actually manage about 300 megawatt per hour with our mining operations, through our mining operation. And that's actually currently roughly around like 2.5% of the entire global Bitcoin network. Majority of our operation currently are still based in China and also some good portion now in Central Asia. I think a large part of Bishin's growth have to do with our early entrance. since like the founder at BeSeen started mining in 2009, we are also very early shareholder of WhatsMiner MicroBT, which is one of the largest mining machine producer. On top of that, we have a lot of investment in mining infrastructure, like different pools and a lot of mining farms, which is directly owned by us. And also we have our proprietary mining software where it gives us access from our central office to control all the control and monitor all the mining farms. So I think mining, even since I joined in 2019 until now, evolved at a very fast speed in terms of like management, logistics, and the different areas.
So every year you've got the migration, right?
Yeah.
And I think that this is the one thing that people know about, but it seems like the move from, and jump in and feel free to correct me if anything that I'm saying is off base, but in April, May, when wet season starts, the move is generally from Inner Mongolia and Xinjiang to Sichuan. Is that correct?
Right. So migration happens basically twice a year when we switch season, during summer to winter to summer. And so currently in China, during the summer season, we call it rainy season, there's abundance of electricity produced in Sichuan and Yunnan region, mostly in Sichuan. And we, a lot of the miners, including us, migrate to Sichuan to mine during the rainy season. Usually it's during May to October. And then October to May, you go to Xinjiang and Inner Mongolia in the past to mine. Although we face some issues with Inner Mongolia now. So that's generally the migration pattern. I think one thing to note that's very interesting here, I was just checking out data with our internal team yesterday, is that I think people always miss like how abundant is the electricity during in summer season in Sichuan. So currently, Bitcoin mining is utilizing only 20% of the excessive energy that is produced in Sichuan region. So meaning that those excessive energy, wow, they're not going on the grid. Like people in the area already, are all supported by the energy, but there's still a lot excessive, and Bitcoin mining is just using 20% of that. And then so,
So a question on that. So in Sichuan, this excess energy, or just all of the energy that's being generated, is it 100% hydro?
Yeah. So I would say at least the one that we utilize is 100% hydro at the moment.
Okay. Yeah. It's just a hot button issue, right? Everyone's talking about the energy mix and clean energy versus, fossil fuels. I mean, I think your thread pretty well summed it up, and we definitely need to discuss that, but I don't want to go too far off on that tangent yet.
Yeah.
Please, when it comes to this migration pattern, May to October, you guys are during the rainy season, you're in Sichuan, and then you migrate back to, to the north and central regions to continue mining. How long are the miners offline? Like in May and in October, how long does it take to move an operation? Is it a couple of weeks? Is it a month?
So I would say just a week, not like months. because it takes time to like get these mining machine off the shelf, put them in the transport, and then put them in, send them to Xinjiang or Inner Mongolia. What's very interesting here is that actually during this migration process, we have had a lot of lessons. You can actually lose up to 5 to 10% of your mining machine during this migration process to malfunctions. And a lot is actually required once you finish the migration to, put them into service again, or just lose a portion of it. I would say like maybe a bit biased here, but currently what we were saying is like the WhatsMiner MicroBT machine probably have the lowest malfunction rate during the migration period. But still that is, I would say a slight loss during the migration period. And obviously you're not mining during that migration period.
It's a big undertaking, just to stand up 100 megawatts to get it racked and mining is no small feat, right?
Right.
It takes a long time. For most people, it's not a quick process to do it twice a year. Really, you're doing it four times, right? Because you've got to break it down and set it up twice.
That's true.
Each. So when you guys are doing this, obviously there's financial incentives and you guys are making enough money to where it justifies that migration. Now with what's going on in Inner Mongolia, does this migration pattern change? And I guess maybe before we get into that, what is the situation right now in Inner Mongolia? What's going on over there?
Yeah. So this has been a very hot topic lately. I think it's very important to clarify that what's happening in Inner Mongolia is actually not targeted toward Bitcoin mining industry. Other high power consumption industries such as steel and cement production have been all given notice to migrate. It is actually a general policy of Chinese government to accelerate its carbon neutral target and utilize more renewable energy in its grid system. So we definitely respect that. And along with other industry, we are moving to area with much higher amount of renewable energy percentage on grid. Of course, this will cause a little short-term inconvenience, but long-term speaking, I think it's definitely a net positive for the industry as a whole, because as more Bitcoin miners start to migrate to different areas, both within and outside of China, it's going to accelerate the decentralization of Bitcoin mining and usage of renewable energy within the Bitcoin mining ecosystem.
That's a big question that I've always wondered. Like at what point do we start to see more miners move out of China? Mm-hmm. Is there anything at play other than the cost of power or the availability of moving back to Inner Mongolia? Does anything else come to mind, or is it strictly incentive or financially driven?
Right. So this would goes into how do we pick a mining farm, right? I would say there's three things that we look at as a major point, which is price, capacity, and voltage. Price determines the Bitcoin mining cost, and capacity directly affect our infrastructure. Voltage directly impact our infrastructure investment, and capacity determine whether or not we even proceed with the initial due diligence, because we typically look for 50 megawatt or up on the capacity. Other variables are also at a very large play here. For example, political concerns, taxation, and internet connections, and the local labor cost is very huge, and stability of energy. So I would say past 2-3 years, we have looked at US regions, actually in North America, multiple times. So in the past, what was a bit concerning was labor cost was actually relatively high. The electricity cost at the time when we studied was still higher than the China region. And also, labor cost, obviously. And, past few years, China-US relationship haven't been the best. and so these are all like consideration for us. I'm just giving North America as an example, but when the miners decide to move out of China, I think these are all that thing.
Well, I should say, if you're considering, Scandinavia, anywhere in Europe, anywhere in North America, labor costs are, they're generally going to be significantly higher than in China, right?
Right. I just want to add here, I think very, very important is that, so this is a pattern we saw like 2-3 years ago. Now the dynamic like really, really shifted of a few reasons. Number one, we actually saw a lot more professional energy companies and energy players started to join in the North America market. And that did like two things. Number one, it allowed off-grid mining, especially when you have like better, compliance, I guess, and an energy team joins the mining movement, which drastically reduced the electricity costs in North America. Number two, it also, people started to trading energy with like wholesale, and that also drastically reduced the cost, right? And I think some people in Texas figured out, peak hours to stop mining at peak hours so that could also drastically reduce the electricity costs. So I think the cost right now, actually, in fact, is almost, especially at 2-3 cents, is same as China, if not cheaper. So the cost drastically reduced. I would say the remaining is just labor cost and some policy changes. But, as we just discussed earlier already, because of the policy also happening in Inner Mongolia, a lot of the miners are looking to move to North America.
Yeah, okay, so we're dealing with non-state money, right? Even Bitcoin. It's non-state money. So if it's non-state money, doesn't every state pose some potential threat? Like for me, it's always very tough to just pin it on one country,
right?
It's like when someone makes a comment about China mining with dirty energy, right? Which, it gets said. And it was recently said by the mayor of Miami, right? And I know that, he probably just didn't have his talking points lined up or whatever the case may be. But when you hear the facts, right, that the government is penalizing large consumers of energy who are relying upon fossil fuels, it really doesn't have anything to do with mining.
No.
Right? It's actually a positive. Like, that's what everyone should do. If we really want to like remove this FUD and move towards, more renewable energy consumption, in my mind, you don't charge a premium for the coins that are mined. You penalize the people and you charge a premium for the power that's being derived from fossil fuels, right? So I don't know, man. It sounds to me like China's doing it the right way.
Yeah. I would say there's just like two types of energy critics, right? Like there is one that just like completely understand how our energy system works, but doesn't think Bitcoin provide any utility value, which obviously both you and I disagree with. A lot of people disagree with that. There's another type that understand how the energy system works, likes the Bitcoin, but does not understand how the energy system works. I mean, to them, I would say, you know, take China as an example. We are already utilizing 43% of the grid system supported by renewable energy in Xinjiang and other areas that we mine. And that number will continue to go up at a very fast speed as we move forward. And during the summer, we're already utilizing close to 100% renewable energy in China. So, and when you're talking about grid system, like you said, it's not like the grid is only supporting Bitcoin mining, it's supporting like a lot of business. So unless you want to, you know, cross-examine every business that's built on top of the grid system, then the better approach would be thinking together, how do we use more renewable energy to power the current grid system? And that's a conversation we would love to engage with, because, you know, using coal is not cheap. And also, we would also love to see, you know, better future for the environment.
So when you're talking about coal not being cheap, what do power prices look like? And obviously you don't have to share proprietary information, but ballpark, mining in the winter on, you know, coal power or mining in the summer using hydro?
Yeah. So again, like even during the winter, it's like you're using grid, right? So the grid is actually a bit more expensive. Like I would say like very bulk prices, probably like 4 to 5 cents. And then during the summer, it can go as low as like, you know, anywhere between 2.5 to 3.5 in the cost range. And so obviously there's like, that's a huge difference. And that's what moves us and a lot of miners to give us motivation to migrate.
Why do you have to move back? Like, can you like just give me 2.5 cent power all year round?
Yeah. No, because like I said, like the Sichuan region mostly only have abundant access of power during the summer. That's why it's much easier to mine there during summertime. Yeah. Although like very interesting is that in regions like Siberia and some part of US, you know, through this supply and demand patterns of playing with the grid, it is possible to drop the all year price to that range, like 2.5 to 3.5, which is why I think I'm very bullish on those regions long term.
No, I'm sure you guys are constantly assessing, as you've mentioned, different places, right? Mm-hmm. Other opportunities, new places to, you know, build facilities and mine Bitcoin. Are there any front runners for you?
What do you mean by
front? Leaders? Like, are there any that you guys have seriously narrowed down as like great potential locations?
In terms of regions?
Yes.
Yeah. So we definitely are looking at very carefully at Siberia and North America. The both of those regions are, especially like North America, we are examining carefully. Right now, there's just a few slight concerns at place, but once those are resolved, I think you will see like exponential growth in US hash power.
Now, Bishan, being one of MicroBT's largest investors, can you tell us when we can get more machines from them? I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I say there's like a few other small issues that we need to solve, right? So take example, like WhatsMiner currently, and both Bitmain, I think, and WhatsMiner are building factories in Southeast Asia, and that's largely because of tariff that is put in place. And so the production capacity will go up there. And those are, I think, all very large place.
Now, okay, so you guys have a presence in both countries. Well, you have a presence in China. Let's say you open facilities elsewhere. Now you will be in both, right? You're not going to move all of your operations out of China. Is that correct? Is that a correct assumption? You'll always operate there as well?
Yes, correct.
So in that case, it still gives you the, you know, the edge when it comes to getting access to the hardware. I know that there's the big push to move hash rate abroad, but is it realistic to think that we'll ever have the majority of hash rate outside of China?
I think it's possible, definitely possible. For us, we are, like you said, constantly assessing the situation around the globe, not just in China, but like in Nordic, in you know, North America and Russia, and also CIS regions. It really depends on a few things, like the policy, price, infrastructure, if there's excessive energy, if there's waste. I think the goal should be not to make Bitcoin mine as much renewable as possible and make it as decentralized as possible. I think that's actually good for everyone in the ecosystem, including us, long term, because that'll like make the infrastructure even more robust than it is now. And that is something we would like to see long term. But I think China will remain, you know, it's also advantages in Bitcoin mining, because currently at least two of the largest Bitcoin machine manufacturers are all based in China. And a lot of the mining pool are also based in China. Although on the mining pool side, we are seeing a lot of advancement also in North America and other regions. So that would also help us decentralization, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the one thing that you've brought up a couple of times that is funny, because I think if I was talking to an American miner about moving to China, he would say the same thing. It's the policy, right? It's the, if you want to call it geopolitical risk, I guess you could. So how do you guys project that things will progress over the next few years with the new administration?
Yeah. So I think what's amazing about the United States is that doesn't matter which administration it is compared to a lot of other regions around the world, it does have a very stable legal system. So if you own this power plant, then this is yours, right? Even if the government come and want to take it from you, they probably have to sue you first. And so that's actually a huge advantage for North America in general. And I think that goes for every miner around the globe. It does provide a huge amount of stability in terms of for mining, as long as you know you have the agreements ahead. When we say geopolitical risk, is more talking about the relationship between the two countries, which can result in things like tariff, which can result in things like just miners' fear of moving to U.S. So those are more geopolitical risks. But I think once you're here in the U.S., it does provide a lot more stronger overall environment.
For people who are listening, who let's say they're interested in mining, they want to get involved in mining, how do you look at it with regards to where you place your operation? I know there's those factors, right, that you've mentioned already. Mm-hmm. But if I'm in Canada and I want to get a megawatt stood up or hosted, how should I look at this? Is China too risky? Should I look at staying at home? Should I look to diversify across different countries and regions? Like what's the thought process?
If there are, I mean, to be honest, I really do think they should contact you. And I'll tell you why actually. They should contact Compass. prior to Compass Mining, right, we always told people like who wanted to mine, like even my family member or other friends, that mining at this stage is not really for retail anymore, because you need a very large scale investment to bring down your electricity price down. Like you need infrastructure investment, you need to purchase mining machines, you need to know how to do like migration, like in China's case. So all those things, I would say doing at a large scale save you cost. But if you're doing at a very small scale, of course, that wouldn't save cost much. But what Compass Mining did, I think, is very amazing. It gave people like, you know, people at a smaller scale access to, you know, same level playing for us, like larger players. So I do think that if you are at a smaller scale and want to get into mining, you know, firms like Compass Mining would be like the best exposure, because you will get to experience the purchasing of mining machine, hosting it, setting it up, and, you know, storing your first Bitcoin through mining. I think those would be amazing experience to have with you guys.
Well, that's our show, guys. We're going to wrap it up on that nice note. No, I'm just kidding. That's Mustafa, man. Thank you for those kind words. it's very kind of you to say. With right now, with the way that the market is, obviously we are in this crazy bull run, right? I know, I'm sure you had projected, you know, 55-60K for 2021, right? That was your prediction in 2019.
So we mentioned earlier on the show, we put out a 7,000 Bitcoin fund back in 2020, beginning of 2020, and you know, I mean, 6,600 back then, now 7,000 in AUM. And those Bitcoin are 100% Bitcoin denominated. So we are very, very bullish on Bitcoin long term and always remain Bitcoin denominated within our operational systems. And so, you know, long term, very bullish for sure.
So with that said, what's the thing that you're most excited about over the next 6 months when it comes to this world that we're living in with this Bitcoin bull market super cycle we've got going on?
I would say, in terms of mining, probably, you know, decentralization and the accelerated speed growth of renewable energy. Those two things I'm actually quite excited about because I think inevitably those things will happen. And within mining, I think that, and also hopefully production increased in the mining machine itself. And so those are definitely things to watch out for and be excited about.
Let's hope so, man. Let's hope we get more of these ASICs coming out for sure. Mustafa, are you going to be in Miami for Bitcoin 2020 or 2021?
Unfortunately, not because I'm moving back to Asia as COVID restrictions are getting better. But, you know, I think in today's age, always very happy to connect with folks like you and a lot of people through Zoom calls or even in person after COVID gets better.
Yes. Looking forward to that, man. Well, I appreciate you making the time to come on and chat today. Really enjoyed this, Mustafa. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
That's a wrap for us at the Compass Podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please subscribe and consider leaving us a 5-star review on your preferred listening platform. Thanks again, everyone. The thoughts and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests on the Compass Podcast are their own and do not represent the opinions of Compass Mining, Inc. None of this content should be considered financial advice.